Welcome to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and reports on solutions and alternatives that help protect and preserve a healthy planet. Most recycling programs in North America are now single stream. Between 2005 and 2014, these programs went from covering 29% of American communities to 80%, according to a survey conducted by the American Forest and Paper Association. Single-stream recycling is deemed more convenient than asking residents to separate different types of material, known as multi-stream recycling. 66% of people surveyed by Harris Poll said that they wouldn't recycle at all if it wasn't easy to do. Today on Earth Matters, we speak to two people deeply involved in the effectiveness of recycling. Dr. Colvin Lacken is a research associate at York University in Toronto, Canada. He is also the co-investigator of the Waste Wiki project at York University, a research project devoted to advancing understanding of waste management research and policy in Canada. A former environmental consultant and a government policy advisor, Colvin has focused his research on the study of recycling, waste diversion, and the comparison of single and multi-stream recycling systems. Chantal Michel is the community program coordinator for a community environmental organization, Burlington Green. Chantel is passionate about waste reduction and diversion, with a focus on food waste reduction and zero waste alternatives. What attracted me to you was your paper from 2015, A Comparison of Single and Multi-Stream Recycling Systems. So tell us how we have evolved, we in North America have evolved from being very diligent at our curbside pickup residential system of sorting glass separate from metal, separate from paper, to just throwing everything in a blue box or a green box and letting someone else just carry it off as they do with the garbage. So what has that done to society and how much have we changed over the years?
Sure. So ultimately, it's an issue of convenience. And there are also some cost considerations. But let's go back to why we had multi-stream separation in the first place. So as you noted, and this depends on jurisdiction, because there are some municipalities that still use multi-stream collection. The idea is that if you have a designated paper stream, a designated plastic stream, a designated metal stream, you ensure the quality of the material. So by keeping everything separate, there's less likelihood for cross-contamination, and also significantly reduced costs at the material recycling facility. So you might hear the term MRF, and that just refers to the material recycling facility where they sort the material. And historically, when I say historically, I mean, I'd say probably prior to the late 1990s, most material recycling facilities were manual labor, meaning that you'd have the material come in a conveyor belt, and you'd have papers on one belt and, you know, plastics on another, and you'd have manual sortation, so it was very labor intensive. But the idea was that since it was already kind of source separated by the household at the curb, it didn't require a lot of mechanization, and, you know, you have a great high-quality stream of material. Where this began to change is, for example, cities like Toronto or regions of Peel and New York region, you have enormous amount of throughput. So an enormous amount of material being generated that you actually have to sort through. And depending on who you ask, there are some advocates or proponents of single stream recycling that say it actually encourages diversion behavior. And so a lot of the research, including my own research, shows that convenience is the most significant predictor of recycling behavior. So the idea that I can go from having to spend, say, 10 minutes on a Sunday sorting out all my recycling to just 10 seconds where I can just throw it all into one bin, that was being seen as very appealing to the consumer because, you know, even though we say we're good environmental citizens, the reality is that not many of us are, you know, committed when it comes to that kind of stuff. And so major municipalities felt that to transition to single stream, not only would you increase diversion participation, but you could actually switch over to heavily mechanized machine-based MRFs. And why that matters, particularly for large cities like Toronto or region of Peel, that when you have hundreds of thousands of tons literally going through your system, manual sortation is prohibitively expensive, and it just takes far too long to actually sort through that material. So what we had was a transition to the single stream, heavily mechanized MRF, and there's all sorts of cool equipment, so like optical sorters and like eddy currents and magnets to kind of sort through all stuff, which was great. But an unintended consequence of switching to single stream recycling was that contamination rates went through the roof. And so, out of curiosity, you're in Hamilton, correct?
Burlington.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Burlington. Do you guys use the carts, like, for waste collection or recycling, or do you still use the bins?
Still the blue box bins, and then in Halton, we also have an organic collection.
Okay. So, over time, you might actually see your city switch to a cart. And the cart is, like, I'm sure you've seen in Toronto, it's those big, big containers, gray for waste, blue for recycling. And instead of having two garbage men come to your house every week or every other week to pick it up, you only need one. And the vehicle itself, it's called a loader, picks up that material, tosses it in. And everybody said, wow, single stream collection is going to result in so much savings. It's going to increase the diversion. It's going to be more convenient for consumers. And all of these things were kind of supported by the theory in the sense that, you know, it's true, you can go from two laborers to one. You can use much more mechanized equipment, so it's much more faster and efficient. But what nobody anticipated was increasing contamination rates. So to give you some context, the city of Toronto's contamination rates doubled from about 15 to 33%. The region of Peel experienced something very similar. And what nobody could have guessed is that that increase in contamination destroyed the recycling commodity market. And that's not unique to Ontario. That I would say that's probably across North America. Mm-hmm. And so what ends up happening is that the value that we were getting from the sale of recyclables, the floor went out from underneath us. And then we were sending so much contaminated material to China, they said, you know what, forgive me for being crass, but we don't want your shit anymore. So they closed the door to us, and that's actually devastated the recycling industry. So this underlying intuition, there was a couple hypotheses. One, it was cheaper, so single-stream collection was cheaper than multi-stream. My research demonstrated that wasn't the case, at least in an Ontario context. The reason being is that the capital cost associated with transitioning your fleet, so not only purchasing carts for everybody, but also having a side-loading vehicle, it's like literally in the millions of dollars for a large municipality. And the increase in contamination made it still very difficult to sort at the MRF, so even with all that fancy technology, it was still really difficult to sort. And since you kind of bred a lazy consumer, and that's kind of a weird characterization, but since we've now become so used to, depending on where we are, just throwing things in the bin, we actually no longer take the time to wash the yogurt out of our containers or to make sure we drain all the residual liquids. We've made recycling as convenient as possible, but it's also made for a lazy recycler. And so that increase in contamination from the on the part of the households has now resulted in so much more material going to landfill, decreases in revenue, which in turn results in an increase in costs. And when we directly compare the two systems, so single stream and multi-stream, a lot of the evidence actually demonstrates that multi-stream collection is both economically and environmentally preferable. Why we can't walk back on that, though, is that the sunk costs of transitioning to single-stream collection, no municipality is going to absorb that. They're not going to switch back. So when Toronto and Peel made that decision, they're stuck with it for better or for worse, and it's caused, you know, some pretty detrimental impacts to our industry.
Okay, so let me stop you there for a second. So at the beginning, the default was to put everything in separated bins or boxes or whatever, so that it was easier for the end users or the contractors for each municipality to sell the cardboard to one supplier, to sell the metal to another supplier. Then they mushed it all together. They thought that they could alleviate that by sorting all the different material at their particular plant. Then what's happened over the years is they found that, as you say, people get lazy, they don't clean the peanut butter out of the jar, or you get a pizza box that's still got the grease on it, and that's no good for the people that want to buy cardboard. But we've crossed that threshold, or have we, or are we almost at that threshold where it's not economic anymore to do it that way, but because the system has changed, sort of flipped over, it would be too expensive to go back to the multi-sorting model?
I would say that's a pretty fair statement. So generally, once a municipality has made... So one final thing to add context is that single stream and automated collection, et cetera, really only makes sense for large municipalities. Like if you have a tiny community in Northern Ontario, you do not need a cart-based system, but there's still some municipalities that choose to do that. Mm-hmm. So for cities like Toronto, that cost, even if going back to multi-stream would result in higher commodity prices, et cetera, the infrastructural cost of transitioning to that system is enormous. And in reality, we're kind of stuck with the system that we have. And so what we're trying to advocate for as we move forward with municipalities who are still designing their programs is to let them think carts are not the only solution and single stream is not the only solution. And it might actually make sense to go back to the old school method where you have the actual garbage bags, you know, the blue bags or the black bags, because there's a number of reasons for that. But that also radically reduces contamination rates. And you get the benefit of what we call curb rejection. So one of the issues with a cart today is that I can't see what's inside of it. The truck driver just comes, picks it up, dumps it in. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have the recycling bags, you can actually reject a load because somebody will say, you put a VCR in with your recyclables, no bueno. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, we're trying to make some recommendations, but you know, we have yet to see what municipalities are going to embrace.
Right. And how much control does the municipality have? There are only so many contractors that are going to come along and collect the waste or the recycling material. Is it not a chicken and egg kind of thing? If you've got four different companies bidding, and they do this, every 4 years or so, mm-hmm. and municipalities are tempted to go with the cheapest option, it's really the waste haulers that are calling the tune as opposed to the municipalities. How much authority do the municipalities say, hey, wait a minute, we need to ensure that X percent of what's collected actually goes to recycle as opposed to out the back door and into the landfill? How does that play out?
I think it very much depends on the municipality. So Toronto wields an inordinate amount of power relative to other municipalities, mm-hmm. and they're almost kind of like a market setter. So it's interesting when you notice how, like you said, you know, the private contractors, so the GFLs or Metro Waste, they designed their systems trying to predict what cities like Toronto will do. Mm-hmm. So they transitioned to single stream thinking, hey, we can bid on Toronto's system because that's where they're going. So Toronto, I would say, has an enormous amount of control over what they want the system to look like. But in turn, everybody else is kind of has to follow the leader. So when Toronto does something, Peel does something. When Peel does something, York Region does something. And then everybody else in the province has to sort of fall in line because, as you noted, the number of processors is very limited. And a lot of these smaller municipalities don't have the ability to negotiate preferable contracts, and it's kind of you take what you get. Mm-hmm. And so the entire industry has kind of been dictated by a very small group of municipalities, which has caused a lot of problems when it comes to autonomy and choice for smaller communities outside of the GTA.
Right, right. Okay. What's the solution? What do you recommend as the next step forward?
It's very complicated. So as noted, there's this enormous sunk cost, and there's also a lot of political motives. So I guarantee you, and I'll be willing to bet my last dollar, if you ask Toronto, is their switch to cart-based program successful, they will say yes, because they don't want to have egg on their face to their councillors, to the province. People behind the scenes kind of know. But if a municipality, how we would phrase this, they have to be willing to kind of take the path less traveled or the path they don't want to travel, and that might result in some short-term costs. But they have to realize the system moving forward. So I'm not too sure how much you know about like EPR in the province and legislation. It's going to move to 100% producer responsibility model. Mm-hmm. So it really won't matter anymore what Toronto wants. It's the producers are going to say, if you want to be a service provider, you have to meet this threshold before we're going to give you your money. And then Toronto and Peel will have to figure out how to meet that threshold. So instead of holding on so tightly to what they've been doing in the past, my solution, and it's not really much of a solution, is to say, think outside of the box. Think about the things that you've rejected in the past. Like, don't be so committed to a single line of thought. Things change. Unexpected things happen, like with the Chinese imports. And you have to be able to respond to that in kind.
Right. So just to back up a little bit for our listeners, in Ontario, up until recently, the cost of or paying for the collection was half and half between producers that contributed to a fund and also the municipalities. And now the provincial government has changed it so that 100% of the cost for the collection of recyclables is borne by producers, correct?
So that's the intent. So technically, the Waste Free Ontario Act does stipulate that, but I believe, and you'd have to double check the numbers, we have the year until 2021 to actually implement the system. The reason being is that we're still trying to figure out what that 100% responsibility model looks like, who will be doing what in terms of collection and processing. So the province gave us essentially a grace period by us and municipalities and stewards, a grace period to sort it all out. But yes, the overall intent eventually is to move towards a 100% responsibility model. However, as of this year, it's still 50-50.
Okay. So it's sort of one step forward, two steps back. We still want people to put out the recycling material. We still want municipalities to contribute to the recycling programs to keep the landfills as empty as possible. And what about the balance between residential areas and industrial facilities such as hospitals and larger mm-hmm. Industries? Is there going to be any movement in that direction? Or because I think the even though the percentage of material that's recycled in residences is approaching anywhere from 40 to 60%, but when it comes to the industrial side and the schools and hospitals and things like that, it's pretty low.
You've hit the nail on the head. And so legislation moving forward is attempting to capture more of an ICNI sector. So existing legislation has all sorts of weird stipulations. You have to be a certain size, have a certain number of employees, but like 85 or 90% of ICNI establishments don't meet those thresholds. So that was under the 2002 Waste Diversion Act. The new act is trying to be more encompassing to say, you know what, we want 90% of the generators to actually adhere to develop a waste management plan to be obliged to have source separation programs. The challenge is always administrative and enforcement. So I can tell you from personal experience, having worked with is that they try to gamble on the fact that, you know, enforcement maybe only has maybe 50 people inside of the MOECC's enforcement division. And so they feel if they're small enough, why on earth would I incur all these costs and get a private collector to come get my garbage and recycling when the likelihood of them actually catching me is very, very low? And that's actually a sentiment that's shared by a lot of small businesses. So it's going to be, moving forward, it'll be a very challenging balancing act to say, no, we really do intend to cover off 90% of all the ICNI generators, and our threat of enforcement is credible. However, the flip side of that is that we don't want to be administratively burdensome. So when you think about, say, in Spadina, a small mom-and-pop shop that sells, like, you know, Asian groceries, it's very difficult for them to go develop a waste management plan, a diversion program, to go contract out with collectors. And so that might actually pose so much of a burden on some companies that it can result in employment losses or like a number of economic implications.
Just to take a step back, so you mentioned an acronym, ICI, which is Industrial Commercial Institutional Entities.
Yeah.
And that lumps, as you pointed out, it lumps the universities and hospitals and industries along with mom and pop shops. So that makes it difficult to legislate something that's going to go right across the board, so that what might work for a hospital with 300 employees might not work for mom and dad and the variety store or convenience store that they operate.
When we look at overall waste generation, ICNI sector makes up about 80% of it. So when we talk about, like you said, the 40 to 60% diversion rate, the reality is like 10 to 15% of all the material that's generated in the province. Mm-hmm. If we want to have a material impact on the environment, we have to get the ICNI sector.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts on, back to our original topic, single stream, multi-stream? Would it help if people took a bit more time and cleaned out the peanut butter jar or did some separating of the material? I know I personally still am in the habit of putting all the paper in one blue box and everything else in another box, and then I'm dismayed to see it all get dumped into the one bin in the truck as it goes by.
You're probably one of the better environmental citizens. So asking households to, like, you know, clean out their jars and drain the liquids, that's a nice to have. However, there's no evidence from the research to say that people are actually going to do that. And what makes it especially challenging in Ontario is that so many of our residents are new immigrants. I'm a son of immigrants. And most of these countries that people are coming from have no history of recycling. So you're asking people to do something that's completely foreign to them. And so that's going to be a challenge moving forward, is how do we get that behavioral change? So I grew up in Canada, and the reduce, reuse, recycle mantra was beat into my head since the early 1980s when I was born. But what do we do with the new Canadians who've never heard that term before? And how do we get them to participate without making it say, hey, this is way too hard for me. I'm just going to say, screw it and throw it in the garbage.
Well, I'll end on a particular interesting note. OECD considers waste materials intended for disposal. And in 1998, Hollander said waste is something that needs to be expelled. However, Gutbert in 2011 said waste is a potential resource. Any comments on those three brief explanations?
I would say the latter is probably the one that I would most likely adhere to. So much like duty, waste is an eye of the beholder. And in reality, it's a resource. Like, our goal at the end of the day is a circular economy where there's no such thing as waste. It's just merely an input for another mode of production. So this idea that there's an end of life that just results in a completely useless disposal, I'm just going to throw it here and never take it away or never use it again. Mm-hmm. We're trying to move away from that. So we would really want to stress to everybody, whether it be a household or a corporation, you should look at waste as a valuable resource, and we need to be maximizing our return on that resource.
My name is Chantal Michel. I am the Community Outreach Coordinator for Burlington Green Environmental Association. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan environmental group here in Burlington working towards helping the community become more sustainable.
Right. And one of the projects that you're undertaking is trying to encourage people to recycle more, or at least know about recycling. So tell us a little bit about that.
So I specifically work with community organizations and businesses, and not only in helping them to recycle, but helping them to reduce their waste to begin with. I think it's super important for people to acknowledge that recycling is not the answer. It's reducing your waste and figuring out how we can create less waste and then divert as much as possible after that point. So I currently will go to businesses, sit down one-on-one with them, see what products they actually are throwing out, and then make suggestions for alternatives that are either compostable or reusable so that we avoid all of the confusion of recycling to begin with. Because it can be very difficult for people, especially coming from different regions and different lifestyles.
Right. So that leads me to the next question. How difficult or what is the reaction from people? Are you surprised at how much they know or how little they know about recycling? Or is it more specific, as you said, specific to the city, specific to the region, specific to the contractor that recycles?
I think recycling has a really bad reputation as being something that is more effort than it actually is. And I think that people don't necessarily understand either the value from those resources or the process of where our waste actually goes. So when it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And when you leave your garbage at the end of your curb, it doesn't matter where it goes from there. I've worked in a number of establishments, especially kitchens, where It wasn't accepted to recycle because it seemed as if it was extra work and you would be asking your staff to do extra work. But how hard is it to put an object in bin A rather than bin B? It doesn't help that each region is different, that facilities do take different things. So when you have a community such as where we are right now in this co-working space, we have people coming from Niagara, people coming from Peel. And when they go into our waste sorting area in the kitchen, they get confused very easily because what is compostable there is not compostable here. So you really do have to take an extra step to make sure you're throwing it out in the right place. And at the end of the day, when people think it's garbage, they don't really care about it. So
now more and more municipalities in North America are going to single stream collection, which means you throw the paper and the metal and the glass and everything else together. Whereas before, when blue box programs and recycling programs were started, you had to separate those things. The advantage is supposedly that more people will take the easier step of throwing everything into one box rather than having to separate it, as you say, happens here. Is that a good thing? Is it easier, actually, for people to recycle?
I think it does make it easier, but then it also makes it less mindful. You are just throwing everything into one bin. You're not separating necessarily what is garbage from that or what is food waste from that. It could just be, you know, the easy alternative is throwing it into the one recycling bin. The contamination is so much higher. The risk for, you know, broken glass or different items in there that will not be able to be used. So at the end of the day, you have a great effort to try to recycle, but what is actually being recycled and extracted from that process? Is it worth it on the other side where they actually are sorting and cleaning and, you know, getting the goods from that? Again, I think it does come from a place of we have to be able to reduce the waste to begin with and then have it be so, okay, glass and cans are, it's easier to put in one thing, but separate your food waste, separate the garbage, and I don't know. I guess you want to make it as easy for people, but there's always going to be a limitation in, first off, how much attention they actually want to pay to it, but then secondly, to the products and disposables that we are choosing in the first place. I think that has a huge part in it.
Now, you mentioned there was a value to the recycled material. Mm-hmm. People actually do collect money on the metal or the glass or the paper when it is recycled. Is that an important thing for the public to understand? If they knew that there was value in those items, that someone was making money on them, mm-hmm. like the guy that goes around with the pickup truck and he picks up scrap metal, you know that he's going to sell it to someone. He's mm-hmm. going to make money. Maybe that's a motivator for people to understand that mm-hmm. when they throw it out properly, then it's going to be valuable to someone. Do you think that's important?
I think it's very important for people to understand that it's not waste unless it's wasted. And that comes for anything. If you have old clothing that you can't wear, it doesn't mean that it's garbage. It means that someone else could find benefit. Someone else could use those textiles. There's still value in that. It's a big thing now is coming from food waste, food surplus. You know, you have this food that people think, oh, I'm just going to throw it out, it's fine. But there's a lot of resources that went into that food, and to just, you know, throw it out, that's such a waste. I think when it comes down to it, in terms of the business aspect of it, for me, I've been really having to show business owners, when you invest in reusable items, that means that you're stopping your spending on disposable cups, forks, spoons, whatever it is. That in itself is saving. That is a financially reasonable thing to do. So I think there is a lot of financial and monetary incentive to doing it, but there needs to be more understanding as to what actually goes into the recycling process and how much that costs, as well as how much you can save by switching to reusable or compostable or things that are not going to end up in the waste stream.
Right. Okay. So tell us what, as a local organization, Burlington Green is doing to educate the community, but also demonstrate that recycling is a positive thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So my role as community outreach coordinator is, again, specifically working with businesses and community organizations. What I do is come in one-on-one, sit down with business owners or team leaders, and see what current initiatives they have going on and where we can expand. When it comes to waste diversion, it's really easy to point out, first off, what you can replace with, again, reusable items, what you can switch from either disposable items to compostable items, and then how you can clearly communicate recycling to your team so that you're doing it properly and efficiently. We've partnered up with MTERRA Group, who is a great local organization here as a waste hauler, and they've agreed to let us do facility tours so people can come and actually see the process, see that this is a business, that this is something of value. We do free lunch and learns for your team. So if you are adopting waste separation, we'll come in and, again, show you the business of it, but then show you how to do it properly, a hands-on training experience. And then we want to promote you. We want to let the community know that, hey, you're taking the first step as being more sustainable, more progressive, and doing this simple act by just separating your waste can help you reduce your impact by so much. Thank you.